Hello, everybody, and happy Sunday. Today, we're going to look at some verses out of John chapter 13 and 14, this book, this marvelous book in the New Testament we've been going through. These chapters are actually part of what's called the farewell discourse at the end of the book of John. Jesus knows he'll soon be leaving the world, so he wants to give his disciples and friends some last bits of advice. So let's take a look at John chapter 13 and 14. Right now, let me read starting in John chapter 13, verse 12. When he, and this is talking about Jesus, when Jesus had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. "Do you understand what I have done for you?" he asked them. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is who I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you should also wash one another's feet." Now let's skip down to verse 21. After he had said this, Jesus was troubled in spirit and testified, "I tell you the truth, one of you is going to betray me." Now let me skip to verse 1 in chapter 14. He says to his disciples, "Do not let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God, trust also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. I am going there to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will also come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. You know the way to the place where I am going." All right, let me share some thoughts on these verses in a message that has a rather long title today and an unusual one. I'm calling it Unnecessary Gallstones, Vulnerable-ish, and Hearts Full of Peace. So let's start with Unnecessary Gallstones. The first last bit of advice Jesus gives his followers does not come actually by his words, it comes by his actions. Jesus, in chapter 13, humbled himself and he took on the role of a servant and he washed the gooky, crusty feet of his disciples. And according to verse 1 of chapter 13, which we didn't read today, you can read this chapter on your own, it says that in doing this, he was actually showing them the full extent of his love. If we ask ourselves the question, what does love look like? Our minds will conjure up different images. Maybe your mind would think of like a wedding scene or a sunset walk on the beach with two people romantically holding hands or bouquets of flowers or even a person holding a newborn infant. And all of these images are fine and dandy. But the most accurate image of love is actually people serving one another. Love looks like people giving hugs. Love looks like people handing out food. Love looks like people building houses for the poor. Love looks like donating blood, and the list goes on, because acts of service are the full extent of love. They're the clearest resolution of love. Now, things are going fine with this whole foot washing scene until Jesus gets to Peter, and Peter objects. And again, you can read this on your own. Peter objects. He doesn't want to let Jesus wash his feet. I totally get that. We don't want others to serve us. We want to be the server. We're kind of uncomfortable being the servee because, truth be told, it just feels kind of needy to be the servee, to be the person that others are serving. I was meeting with a kid. He's 32, actually, but I'm 60 now, so anybody under 40 seems like a kid. But he used to be in my middle school youth group years and years ago, and we bumped into each other. So we went out to lunch, and we were just catching up. And I asked him about how things have gone the last few years, and one of the stories he mentioned is he goes, "Wow, one tough part of my life is I had gallstones." I go, "Oh no, I've heard those are really, really painful." And he goes, "Oh my goodness, it was so painful. There'd be times I was like on the floor just writhing in pain. And I said, "Oh, that's such a bummer." He goes, "Yeah, this went on for about 5 months." And I go, "5 months? You didn't go to the doctor?" He goes, "No." And I go, "Why didn't you go to the doctor?" He goes, "Oh, I just was hoping it would pass on its own. I was too embarrassed to ask for help." And I thought, what a dinkus. I can't believe you suffered that long. But as I thought about this later, I thought, yeah, we all do similar things. I thought about my own life. It took me a long time to finally admit I needed to go to see a therapist because for years I thought, I'm not going to therapy. That's like for crazy needy people. Until it dawned on me one day, I am a needy person. We're all needy. But what Peter and most of us don't realize is that there is a great blessing attached to being a needy person. This sounds crazy, and that's because most people in our culture think of needy people as like emotional vampires, the kind of people that walk into a room and latch onto you and suck the life out of you. So our culture says, never be needy. Be anything, but just don't be needy. Be quirky, be wanty, be sleepy, be dopey, be whatever. Just don't be needy. But that mindset actually causes us to miss out on a blessing. Seriously, let me explain. Jesus, in his epic Sermon on the Mount, says this famous phrase, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." What? So what he's saying is, blessed are the humble, the empty, the needy, the people who are always asking for help. They're the blessed ones. Yes, because according to this phrase, everything of God is available to them. Can this be true? Again, yes, because when we allow ourselves to be served, we will experience the blessing of having a greater fullness of God in our lives, because God inhabits the lives of the people who serve. So when we are being served, these people are not just bringing us help, they are, in a very real way, actually bringing us more of God. And who would want to miss out on that blessing? So when people ask you, hey, do you need some help? Say yes. Always say yes. Don't be afraid to be the servee, because there's a blessing attached to that. Martin Luther, who all the Lutheran churches in the world are named after, says this, God receives none but those who are forsaken, restores health to none but those who are sick, gives sight to none but those who are blind, and life to none but those who are dead. Or in other words, he is saying, blessed are the needy. All right, let's move on to a bit of advice number two, and it has to do with the phrase vulnerable-ish. Being served is difficult enough, but Jesus also wants us to be people who are vulnerable. And I think I speak for everybody when I reply to that thought and say, dang it, dang it. Seriously, we have to be vulnerable? Yes, we do. And we know Jesus wants us to be vulnerable because he actually modeled it for us. In verse 21, it says that Jesus was troubled in spirit. Those words would have never been recorded in Scripture if it weren't for the fact that Jesus was vulnerable enough with his disciples that he actually didn't try and hide the fact that he was struggling. And then in verse 26, we come across some more vulnerability on the part of Jesus. It says that Jesus allowed Judas to be in his inner circle of disciples and close friends. Judas, of all people, even though he knew Judas was going to betray him and hand him over to be crucified in just a few short days. Jesus could have protected himself from this betrayal and the pain that went along with it, but he didn't. Instead, he chose vulnerability and the hurt that went with it. Jesus knew that you can't have love without vulnerability. I love C.S. Lewis. I've read a lot of his books, and I hope you have too. The Chronicles of Narnia are classics, and so is Mere Christianity. But listen to what C.S. Lewis says about vulnerability. He says this, "To love at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything, and your heart will be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give it to no one, not even an animal." C.S. Lewis is right, and I hate that. I would actually like to be able to give and receive love on a much safer basis. I prefer not to be vulnerable. I would rather be vulnerable-ish, because that way, seriously, that way, if people betray me, abandon me, hurt me, reject me, or even die on me, it'll sting, but only just a little bit. Many of you know what I'm talking about. You've been vulnerable with someone and they hurt you, and you spent sleepless nights filled with hot, steaming tears. Moments when you're in such pain, your life doesn't even make sense to you. You've learned to swear a little more creatively. You got that going for you. But you're in such pain, and you wonder if this whole vulnerability thing is actually worth it. It is. Because if we are truly going to love people, we have to risk getting hurt by people. Because the other option is to build these emotional walls around our heart to keep the pain out, to prevent us from having our hearts broken and mangled. And those walls work, and I speak from experience. I lived years with emotional walls around my heart. But here's the issue. Those walls, they will keep the hurt out. They're effective. But those same walls will also keep the love and the friendship out of our lives. That's the bummer part of those walls. Life at its best, and I learned this, is lived with no walls and no safety net. And the key to tearing down these walls around your heart, if you have them, and becoming a vulnerable person is actually one word. And the word is trust. We have to ask ourselves the question, do I trust that if I let people deeply into my life, if I'm vulnerable with them, and some of them hurt and mangle my heart, can God mend my heart? Can he put all the pieces of my broken heart back together again? I believe God can, because I've actually experienced that. And that kind of trust in God gives you the courage to be vulnerable, which is awesome, because vulnerable people are free. The people that I know that are the most vulnerable are the freest people on the planet. They are free to ask a person out on a date, even though they know they might be rejected. They are free to share their opinions on matters, even though they know they might be mocked. They're free to enter into serious relationships again, even though their prior relationship was a total tire fire. They're free to stop pretending, and they can be their true selves. They're so free. To look at them is just beautiful. There's a poem by T.S. Eliot. He wrote a lot. But there's one that probably not many of you have read. It's called The Love Song of Alfred Prufrock. I'm serious. What a great title. And it contains a line that says this: "And indeed there will be time to wonder, do I dare, do I dare?" Let's answer that question. Yes, I dare. I dare to be vulnerable. And when we do dare to be vulnerable, we will never regret it, because that's when we'll experience love and mending and freedom and life to its fullest. Now let's move on to the last bit of advice I'd like to talk about today, and it has to do with hearts full of peace. In the first four chapters of John chapter 14, Jesus makes this statement, or in the first four verses of John chapter 14, Jesus makes this statement: "Do not let your hearts be troubled." What a shocking statement that is to make. Of course the hearts of his disciples and friends were troubled. Jesus had just told them that one of them would betray him. He'd also told them that one of them would go on to deny that they even knew Jesus, not once, not twice, but three times, and he was letting them know about his upcoming death and departure from this world. So of course their hearts were troubled. Who could blame them? My wife and I just finished watching the sitcom. We have some DVDs of the sitcom Friends that went for 10 years, from 1995 to 2005. And every once in a while, we just binge watch all 10 seasons of it. It's so fun. But there's one particular episode towards the end of season 10. And Monica and Chandler, two of the main characters, are married, and they're adopting a child. And they're in the delivery room, actually, with the woman who's going to give them a child, when the doctor announces to them, "Hey, bit of a surprise here. There's not one child that's coming out today, there's two." So they instantly know they're not having one kid, but two, and they weren't prepared for that. And Chandler, the husband, starts freaking out. And Monica looks at him and says, "You're freaking out." And I love his response. He says, "Yeah, come and join me, won't you?" That is so great. What a great response. That's probably what the disciples wanted to say to Jesus. Our hearts are troubled. Yeah, why don't you come and join us, Jesus? You just let us know some troubling news. But Jesus doesn't go there. Instead, he says, "Don't let your hearts be troubled." And later on in verse 21, he says, "My peace I give to you." And here's the cool part. Jesus says two things in these verses that will actually help all of us go from having a troubled heart to having hearts full of peace. The first has to do with community. Notice that Jesus says, "Do not let your hearts be troubled." These words were spoken to a group, and this is huge. It shows us something. It shows us that peace is actually a community thing. And I've found that to be so true. Being in a community like we are here today, gathering on Sunday, is actually our first step in going from troubled hearts to hearts full of peace. Because we all have the Spirit of the living God percolating inside of us. And one of the qualities or fruits of the Spirit, as Scripture labels it, is peace. So that means when we come into a room and purposely gather together, that the peace of God that is inside of us is radiating out to all the people around us, whether we know it or not. And the peace that's inside of others is radiating on to us. So we are creating, again, whether we know it or not, we are creating an oasis of peace in this room. Isn't that fantastic? You know, I love Southern lingo, and I love the drawls that people from the Deep South talk in. I'm not going to try to say anything in a Southern drawl, because once I start, I can't stop for a while, and it's just annoying. But two of the particular phrases that they have in the Deep South that I just love, I absolutely love these phrases. First of all, the phrase, "I can't, never could do that." That is so great. Like if somebody was to ask me, "Can you come and help me fix my car?" I would reply, "Well, I can't, never could do that." It's the greatest double negative ever, okay? But the phrase from the South that I love more than any of the others is this, "all y'all." People say that in the South. They don't just say y'all or all of you. They combine them and say all you all. It's so inclusive. They just don't want to leave anybody out. And I think if Jesus was going to say the phrase that we were talking about earlier, and he was going to say it as a person from the Deep South, he'd say it like this: "Don't let all y'all's hearts be troubled. Find peace in community." I think that's how he would say it. The second thing that Jesus says that takes us from troubled hearts to hearts full of peace involves the future. It actually involves seeing the future. Now, when I even mention that word future, some of you, your chest tightened up a little bit, and you think, well, the future, that sounds scary. Will I be married? Will I have kids? Will my kids be weird? Will I be weird? Will I even be alive? Will civilization crumble into something resembling a Mad Max movie? We have all these thoughts, and most of them are scary. But in John chapter 14, Jesus uses the thought of the future as something comforting, not frightening. And let me explain. Right after saying, "Do not let your hearts be troubled," Jesus says these words, "Trust me, I go and prepare a place for you." These words are significant. This is wedding language, because in this culture at this time, when a couple got engaged, the groom would then go and build an add-on on his father's house. It would usually take about 9 months to a year. And then after that add-on was finished, he would go and he would get his bride, and they would go through the wedding ceremony. And then after the ceremony, they would move into the add-on. The bride didn't have anything to worry about. The groom had prepared a place for them to live. We, the church, all of us, are referred to in Scripture as the bride of Christ on several occasions. And that's important. Jesus is letting us know in these verses that we don't have anything to worry about in regards to our future. He has it covered. There's a place for us with him in the future. And this is important in our lives because what we believe about the future is so important. First of all, our excitement about the future can actually help us endure the troubles of the present. And that makes me think of me when I'm traveling. I love to travel. I just don't like the traveling part. I like where I'm getting to. I just don't like the going because I have ADD and traveling is difficult. My mind just races when I travel. My ADD just goes off. Let me take you on a journey into my mind. Buckle up. That happens almost every time I travel. I think these thoughts, and I got a list of them, almost every time I travel. The first one, every time I get onto a plane, I think, how can this thing fly? It should not be able to fly. It is too big. There's too many people on it. And some of these people's carry-on luggage weighs a ton, my wife's included. This thing's not going to get off the ground. I'm always amazed when the plane actually takes off. And then I think, I got to wear a mask on the plane. I hate that. It reminds me of COVID. But I got to wear it because the dude behind me is like hacking up a lung. And I don't even know why he flies when he's that sick, but I've seen the video of how germs spread on a plane, and it is chilling, so I'm going to go ahead and wear this mask. And then, after I put my mask on, I think, okay, maybe I can take a nap. Maybe I can kill some time. It's a long flight. I'll just try to take a nap. So I know I'll recline my seat, and I recline it, and it goes back like an inch and a quarter. I think, seriously, they haven't rectified that situation yet. I can't recline when I'm sitting up that straight, or I can't sleep when I'm sitting up that straight. And then, and this happens a lot too, I think, why is the dude beside me hogging the armrest? Why does he assume that the armrest in between us is his sovereign territory? But then when he gets up to go to the bathroom, I think, ooh, he's getting up to go to the bathroom. I'm going to commandeer the armrest. And so I do. I put my arm on the armrest. It is mine now. And I think at that moment, I really should be a better Christian, but I'll do that later. I really want the armrest. And then to kill more time, I think, you know what? I'm just going to look at the screen in front of me. I'm going to see where the tiny plane on the map is because I'm sure we've made it at least a third of the way. So I turn on the screen. I look at the plane. I think, no, we haven't made it hardly anywhere. We're just like hovering. Go faster. And then one of my last thoughts, and this all happens within minutes sometimes, one of the last thoughts when I get on a plane is this. Is this a Boeing? I actually think that. So traveling is difficult for me, but what gets me through the process of traveling is thinking about the joy of my destination. And it's the same in life. When our hearts are troubled, we can return over and over again, as many times as we need to the knowledge that God is already present in the future that we're currently worrying about. And that thought brings us such peace, it actually pulls us into peace. And also what we think about the future is important because it shapes and determines how we will live in the present. If the future seems scary and ominous to you, chances are you will live your life in desperation and fear and probably bury a bunker in your backyard. But if we view the future as a friend, we will live our lives in hope and peace. And we will actually get to partner with Jesus in creating the future that we are now actually looking forward to. That is so great. All right, I have said enough today. I'm going to shut up. And in a moment, Linda's going to come up and make some announcements to us, but before that, my buddy Jordan McGill's going to come up and lead us in a spiritual practice that helps us live out the truth of the scriptures that we heard today. Jordan, come on up.